Hello, and welcome to the latest episode of the Substation podcast. My name is Tom Edwards, and I'm joined by
Emma Burns.
And we would like to say thank you to everybody who was very kind about us returning after our brief hiatus. It meant a lot to us. Thank you very much. And in our second episode of The Return, we've got a subject which is causing lots of kind of debate and controversy. We're going to talk about skip rates. So this is a phenomenon that occurs mostly in the balancing mechanism. I was about to say markets then. That would have got me in trouble. But Emma, what is a skip rate, please?
Cool question. And I think a meaty one to get started with. I mean, the term, I suppose, is not a defined industry term. It's kind of industry slang, if we could call it that. It's a term that sort of emerged, I'm going to say, since 2017, 2018-ish, particularly amongst the battery storage community. And I do think different people mean different things by it. At its simplest, it is not accepting an in-merit bid or offer in the balancing mechanism.
Imagine that we need to buy additional power in the next settlement period, and we have a list of offers which are incremental options to buy power, and we would rank them all from low to high. And what you're saying is the skip rate is how much we're avoiding the lows and buying the highs, or skipping over things in between.
Exactly. So in an efficient market, I think the words efficient and market are important ones, and we'll come back to those later. But in an efficient market, you would take the cheapest actions or the cheapest providers of a good or a service first until demand is met, and you go up in price order, and that's the most, the electricity industry term, that's efficient dispatch. But when we talk about skip rates, we're saying we're not going in that order from least to highest cost. We're taking more expensive actions for some reason.
You said that that's the most simple definition of what a skip rate is.
Yeah.
What's the more complicated one?
Well, I suppose there's a few nuances to this. I guess, as I mentioned, it emerged from industry. It's a industry slang, energy industry slang, if you will. But I know National Grid have proposed a definition of skip rates. So they talk about a skip rate as being an event where a bidder or an offer is instructed at a higher cost than an alternative option. So they say National Grid strives to have zero skip rates, but that they can be at times unpreventable. So National Grid, the issue of skip rates has obviously been on the radar for National Grid for years because of the concerns from industry. And I suppose we'll come on to this later, but one of the main reactions from National Grid to this concern that assets aren't being taken when they should be, when they're in merit, is to provide more data around why it's taking the actions that it is. So I suppose when I think about there being different definitions of skip rates, I think a very simplistic definition of skip rate says this action wasn't taken because it wasn't in merit. A more nuanced definition of skip rates would say this action wasn't taken because it wasn't exactly the type of action that we needed. And I think when National Grid talks about skip rates, it's talking more about that, the kind of more nuanced nature of the balancing mechanism that we'll come on to. Whereas when the industry talk about it, they are looking at the balancing mechanism as if it is a market with pure market fundamentals and efficient dispatch, but where it's not.
So to a layman, or sorry, what's the best way? So to someone who's uninitiated, you might look at this and go, hold on, but it should be easy to see which one is the cheapest one and which one is the most expensive one, and to always pick the cheapest one. But what National Grid is actually saying in their definition is that there's a lot of really good reasons why they don't always pick the cheapest option, because either a generator is not in a position to provide the service, or Grid doesn't believe they're in a position to provide the service. It could be that the generator isn't quick enough to actually provide for what National Grid needs. It could be that the generator is not in the right location. it could be that National Grid is holding that generator back for another purpose it thinks it might need it later. And it could also be that it's a real big faff to ask for 20 separate activations when they could just ask for one, even though that last one might be more expensive.
Exactly. What we have, the balancing mechanism, isn't a simple market, is the key point there. So Tom, maybe do you want to tell us what the balancing mechanism is?
Yes. So the balancing mechanism is the legacy IT system that was developed in, I want to say like the 1980s, but it's the central control system that came over from the days of the pool, and it became the residual balancing market. And it's the IT system that sits in the middle of the balancing and settlement code. And it's where generators are able to signal their availability and their positions and prices at which they are willing to deviate from those positions to the central system operator. The central system operator then uses this system, in theory, to balance every need it has after gate closure, which is the hour before delivery of real time. So the balancing mechanism is a catch-all term for this IT system that includes lots of forecasting, dispatch, communications, and optimization tools. From what I have heard, some of which is written in Fortran, which is like a it's often used as the butt of a joke for really old programming languages, but apparently some of it is still written in that.
How old are we talking here?
70s, I think. And so National Grid's trying to optimize all of these things together. So it's trying to deal with its voltage issues, its thermal constraint issues, its inertia issues. It's trying to manage headroom and footroom, which are the levels of operating margin it has around its forecast demand and generation mix, as well as taking all the information about whether or not a generator will be available, how much it has available, whether or not if an action is taken, it will affect future periods. Mm. So that if you turn the generator off now, it's then off for the next 4 hours as it cools down. Or if you turn the generator on, it needs to be on for the next 4 hours because it can't just turn back on and off again. So it has to take all of this information into account. Ultimately, as well, there's the control room engineers who are the ones actually responsible sitting in there and managing all of these parts of the system. And they're being fed into by all the forecasters. So it's basically the nexus of the electricity market as well. Mm. So not only that is the balancing mechanism feeds through into the parts of the balancing and settlement code, which inform the imbalance price, which are the fundamental driver for why people trade electricity and dispatch and self-dispatch in the first place. So it's this hugely complicated bit that sits in the middle. It's an old IT system, although it's getting newer, as we'll describe later. And it's kind of the core of the electricity market in many ways. But it's also this IT system. I mean, it interfaces with the grid code, the CUSC, the balancing and settlement code. So it also sits in and is referenced all sorts of part of the code governance structure. And it's really important. And finally, I guess my last point is it's like the last stop shop for flexibility. So if you want to be a real player in the balancing market and do flexibility, the balancing mechanism is the place to be, partly because it's just got the largest volumes.
And you said it was the core of the electricity market, but it's not a market.
Thank you. Exactly. The reason we don't call it the balancing market is because it's not a market. A, partly because it's a one-sided market. There's only one buyer. And B, because it's this mechanism. So it's partly the IT structures. It's partly the guidance that control engineers are given about how to use them. And then there's this other part of the license, which is the balancing principle statement, which is supposed to govern how the electricity system operator actually uses all of the tools in its toolkit. So it's not really a market. Finally, because you're not buying the same thing, because National Grid can buy 4, 5, 6 different things within the balancing mechanism. So 1 megawatt that you offer to the system operator could actually fulfill a range of different needs. Mm. And each megawatt is not necessarily fungible with another megawatt in the system.
I mean, you say 4, 5, 6 different things is probably more if you consider all the different locations to be non-fungible with each other.
Yeah.
Is that the right term?
Exactly. That's the right term. Yeah.
I think the point that you mentioned around the balancing principle statement is really important. And I think linking back to what you said, kind of the how the balancing mechanism emerged and it came out of, you know, this move from full centralization of pricing and dispatch decisions to this world where the market was meant to do most of the heavy lifting, and this kind of the role for the balancing mechanism was residual balancer. And as we've noted, you know, that's kind of changed a lot over time. Like, how do the balancing principles support that role or not, as the case may be?
Yep. So the balancing principle statements define the broad principles and criteria by which balancing services will be used to enable the economic and efficient operation of the system. You can tell I'm literally reading out from the, from the balancing principle statement there.
Why do they matter? Why is this an important document?
So crucially, this is a license obligation on the electricity system operator. And the one that I think matters to us most in a discussion of skip rates is the license obligation to operate the transmission system in an efficient, economic and coordinated manner, and their duty not to discriminate in the procurement or use of balancing services. So what we've got here is that they need to be efficient and economic. So that is the license obligation to get things right at the lowest possible cost to the consumer. Mm-hmm. And the second part there is not to discriminate in their procurement and or use of balancing services. Mm-hmm. So a skip rate, if such a thing exists, should technically be close to a license infringement. However, there is a get-out clause in that the bid and offers, so it specifically says bids and offers in the balancing mechanism and ancillary services should be called off in cost order where possible, except for technical constraints such as constraint management. But even then, BOAs should be called in cost order if they have a cost order for that constraint management. So the get out clause here is National Grid would say we were technically unable to take that offer if it was the next cheapest one. It's not in the right place of the country. That battery doesn't have any energy left, or the unit won't be ready in time.
So National Grid have principles that they're to follow about, you know, level playing field, cost. But they've also got other incentives on them. So whether that's through other license obligations or revenue incentive mechanisms, how do those other incentives maybe work against National Grid in meeting some of the balancing principles that you've just highlighted?
So I think the key one here would be the compliance with the NERT SQSS. So that's the National Electricity Transmission System Security, Quality and Supply Standards. So this is the bit about operating the transmission system in a safe manner. And that means that's generally going to come first, is maintaining the system within safe and operable limits. So if there were a reason for them to you know, favour one unit over another in contravention of the balancing principle statement, an argument to say, well, actually, we needed it for security of supply is going to trump that. The other one would be that National Grid also has a whole bunch of commercial incentives around how they are transparent and how they perform against balancing principles that also basically mean they have to try their best because they are being monitored by Ofgem, and the amount of money they receive is affected by that. So that would also be a consideration. There's also an annual audit as well, just to check that all the data is right and is being used in the correct manner. So that there are checks and balances on this, but that's where it starts to get very confusing, because it's difficult to see, if you're just looking at all the data, why a unit got skipped over. And even when you're looking at, so there is some data, if you go onto the National Grid data portal, and you can
find a lot of data.
Yep, you can find, there's a specific data point, I believe it's contingency codes, that basically for each BOA that they accepted, they give a code for why that one was or wasn't accepted. And it's not necessarily clear, even from that data, to work out why a unit was in or out of merit in that particular half an hour period, partly due to just the sheer volume of data that's going through and the speed with which the decisions need to be taken. And
yeah, well, it's all of those things, but it's also the fact that there's people, I mean, you mentioned control room engineers who are at the heart of all of this, So there's human decisions being made and interactions with different people, different teams as well.
Yeah. So a good point to talk about is the activities of the control room and the control room engineers. So when we say the balancing mechanism, there isn't an AI or a automated optimization algorithm sitting in the middle of this. There are the balancing principle statements, documents about how decisions should be made, handover notes between engineers about what the problems were and what they think is going to happen. You've got forecasts feeding through. And then the control room engineer sitting at that desk has to look at all of the information, bearing in mind that they have to make these decisions only an hour before real time. They get this information then from all the generators saying, I can do this, I can do that, at this price, at that price. They've got to pull up all of these windows, look at all of those things, take into account all of this information, then send off dispatch instructions through this system. And so there's a lot of points of interaction. There's a lot of points where data has to be pulled up. And a lot of this is quite manual from feedback that that we've got from talking to the system operator is that, you know, there's lots of windows that need to be opened. There's lots of windows that need to be compared to get side by side against each other. Actually dispatching a unit is not the smoothest thing in the world.
Mm-hmm. I think they reckoned it was about 5 or 6 buttons that needed to be pressed just per dispatch.
I think it was like 30 or 40 seconds of effort as well. Yeah. So if you've got, so one of the classic examples here is that it was difficult to do multiple dispatch. So as we'll get onto in a bit, but basically if you wanted to do 20 different units and they were all the cheapest, but there was one at the top who could provide everything that you needed. Well, if you were in a hurry because you're sitting at the helm of the nation's electricity supplies, you might just pick the one at the top because it was cheap. Time cheaper to do, and you have to get on with managing the next half an hour period as well because you're managing 3 half hours. It's not an easy job, I guess, is what I was trying to say there. So you also mentioned that this system is changing quite a lot, and I think it's very important to, like, as we said at the beginning, this is a system that evolved out of like the 1990s.
Yeah, the world is different, technology is different, the market is different, the industry is different. So I think one of the biggest changes we've seen is sort of a huge kind of proliferation almost of, you know, this movement from a small number of larger assets to a larger number of smaller assets. So we've much more capacity that's embedded within the distribution network, all different parts of the country. We have much more capacity that is smaller. So, you know, in the 90s, I suppose the cutoff point might have been about 100. I don't know, what was an average coal and gas station?
About 2 gigs.
2 gig, yeah. So anything, well, National Grid didn't have any visibility of anything necessarily below 100. That was kind of...
Yeah, large is considered 100.
Large is 100, yeah. And it still
there
is.
There may have been 1 or 2 stations that were smaller than that. Cows, Slough, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. In general, things were bigger.
And now you're talking about... like a typical reciprocating engine gas power station might be, what, 20 in order to stay below the emissions exemption limit?
And then you've got the NSIP. What's that again?
50, isn't it?
50.
National Infrastructure Significant. Yeah. The planning threshold.
So, yeah, things are, we've much larger proportion of smaller things. We've also got storage things, which obviously behave differently to traditional assets, and demand side response. So again, another sort of different type of capacity that is available to National Grid.
And of course, the job itself is getting harder to actually balance.
Exactly.
I've found some stats here. In the last 3 years, the average share of the balancing mechanism as a gross percentage of the total megawatt hours dispatched on the system by both the market and by National Grid. So, and this is gross BOA volume, so counting bids as if they were positive, divided by the total generation volumes has been 9%. If we looked back 10 to 15 years ago, this would have been about below 5%. And this is because the system is more challenging to balance because of the greater penetration of renewables. In 2020, that number was actually 14%, and that's as a result of low demand and there being good renewables output. And at the time, ESO was saying this might be equivalent to managing the system in 2025.
And from memory, in the kind of early design documents for the market that we have now. So when they moved from the pool, it was 1 to 2%. I think more in the region of 1%. It was assumed to be the role that National Grid would take as this residual balancer. So it's, yeah, the market that we designed is not necessarily optimized for the system operator that we have now.
So I guess the key question is why do skip rates matter so much? Why do they animate people?
Question. it's a great question. I mean, I suppose, as you mentioned at the start, I think there is sometimes maybe a bit of a misconception about what the balancing mechanism is, and people assume that it is like another market. So it's like the day ahead market or an auction or something like that, where there is a clear kind of merit order and cost stack. So I think partly it's that. But I think because of the systems issues that you've mentioned, you know, the old technology, the challenges in terms of system optimization, there are clearly legitimate concerns there that people may have that their asset isn't being taken as much as it should be because it is smaller, it is embedded, it is storage, whatever. There's definitely legitimate concerns there. And, you know, as we move into this future world with greater proportion of intermittency and requirement for clean storage, the role for that real-time balancing, whether it's a balancing mechanism, a balancing market, whatever it is, that the role for that is inherently going to become bigger. So therefore, there'll be more money to be made in the balancing mechanism, and therefore it'll become a more important part of the kind of business case or revenue stack of people making investments. So it's becoming more important. There are these concerns about it. And I think there are also concerns about how quickly we can introduce changes.
I think what you're trying to get at here is that if you're, so speaking as a modeler and have someone who reads a lot of documents that are about forecasting the future, storage flexibility plays an absolutely key role in enabling us to meet net zero. If you're going to have a system that has 90 to 100 gigawatts of wind on it, you're going to need a big chunk of batteries, flexible generation, reciprocating engines, hydrogen engines, demand side response. And if you're somebody who's investing in batteries and you want to say, hey, look at this future world where we're going to need lots of batteries in order to meet all of our targets, but just ignore how it works right now because we don't get activated because the system can't cope with us, is not a great story to tell investors and people who want to invest in your kit. So I think it's absolutely, I think there is a really good reason why people are upset about skip rates, because you could point to, if you wanted to blow a hole in a business case to somebody, you'd point to it and say, well, how come you didn't get activated here when you were clearly in the money?
Yeah. And I think there's a sense of kind of powerlessness as well, maybe, you know, to resolve these issues and to be dispatched, ultimately, assets are reliant on National Grid, on electricity system operator. In other markets, there's much more flexibility to trade or you know, create products as you want to.
If you're building a wind farm, you can always say, I will sell the electricity to someone, either households in the southeast or factories in the northwest. And, you know, there's loads of people who want to buy their electricity.
Yeah.
If you're selling flexibility, there's only one buyer. So that's why it's important. Mm-hmm. And that's why it animates everyone. I think the other final bit is the transparency issue, in that it's really opaque what's going on. And people who are building batteries and storage and demand side response, they're all really tech savvy. You know, they want to be... They're used to markets that have got lots of data and you can analyze them and work out what's happening. Sometimes you just can't figure out why something's happened and why something's been skipped over.
Yeah.
Just because it's really complicated, and a lot of this optimization is being done in real time by human beings who then have to afterwards go and justify what they did and write this down. But they've also got at the same time to manage the next whole shower.
Mm-hmm.
So what's actually changing? Unless you have a sudden thought that was going to interject. So there's been a range of ways that National Grid is dealing with this, because realistically, we are changing who the residual balancer is. It's going to become the future system operator, but we don't really have another option. We need this to work. So there's something In 2022, there was the strategic capability review of feature balancing that concluded that there was some work to be done and that National Grid should go away and plan for that, alongside RIIO-2 objectives that the ESO has. So they've also got objectives to invest in new kit and equipment and more people, etc. And out of that, they established 4 stakeholder groups around optimization, storage, forecasting, and IT capability. And those groups have met, I think, twice now. So the changes that have actually been made in the short term have been in winter 2021, a new flexibility flag was added to what the control room engineers could see about how flexible the generators were. There were changes to the power available signals so that there was a reduced need to back off wind in certain situations.
What's the power available signal, Tom?
Power available signal is a real-time signal from wind farms as to what they should be producing for a given wind speed. So normally you signal your final physical notification at gate closure, and that doesn't then change for the next hour and a half. But a wind farm, obviously the wind is going up and down all the time. So a final physical notification from a wind farm isn't really worth very much, because by the time you actually get to real time, it's probably changed. So the power available signal overwrites that and allows the ESO to see a real time view of, given the wind speed and the turbine availability, this is the output that we think that the wind farm should be doing. In spring 2022, they trialed the automatic instruction repeater, which allows them to just fire off the same instruction again and again without having to repeat the process, and other changes to reduce manual workload. In winter 2022, there was a new tool added to allow filtering of bowers by a constraint, so that you could pick a certain constraint and you'd only see the bowers that were affected by that. There were new screens as well, so that they could look at how bi-directional units, the data for bi-directional units. In spring 2023, there was a forecast profile update and a new service to help them find the cheapest bi-directional unit. And in winter 2023, this is the exciting bit, there's a quick navigation from the price tag to the bower instruction screen, and the improvements to the alarm system. But most importantly, there's the Open Balancing Program, which is going live in 2023. The Open Balancing Program is a new system that's going to run alongside the balancing mechanism. It's not going to replace it, but it's going to run alongside it. And it helps users by providing a bulk dispatch instruction and a better user experience with more automation in it. So that should theoretically help improve some of this by making the whole system easier to use.
What does it mean that it's going to run alongside the BM? What's the point then?
So it's not replacing the balancing mechanism, because that would be very expensive and require lots of testing and would take a long time. So this just takes in the same level of data and adds in a new layer. So you see some new screens, some new charts, and it interfaces with certain parts of the balancing mechanism in certain ways. I'm making diagrammy hands that Emma can see, but you dear podcast listener cannot. And basically, it's another piece of software that runs alongside the BM. It doesn't replace it. It's just another tool that sits alongside it, that's taking in the same data and interfacing with that. It means they don't have to rewrite the whole thing. Mm. They're just adding in new bits alongside. And this new, the other important part is that this is a new open data platform that will allow them to be much more agile in their development. So again, sorry, using consultancy management terms here, but it should be easier for them to write additions and put new tools into this than it is into the legacy BM systems, which require quite specialized knowledge in order to use. So that is then going to be built upon over time and might eventually replace the balancing mechanism or come up with new tools or new algorithms that can actually do some automatic things. But at this point in time, it's just additional tools that sit alongside the BM.
That all sounds quite techy. How optimistic are you that this is going to, these changes are going to solve the issue of skip rates?
I think in the short to medium term, that making an IT system that is more agile, has more options, better data provision, takes more of the workload off the control room engineer should allow that to lessen. I'm not necessarily sure that, again, coming back to, there will always be times when you need to skip over something because of that technical constraint issue. So there'll probably, there'll always be times when that generator's just not in the right part of the country, so we skipped over it. So, you know, that's never going to be solved, in inverted commas. But I do think that this should allow better decision-making on the part of the control room engineers that should theoretically reduce the level of skip rates for those bits where they are trying to minimize their workload and where the data is opaque or there's lots of it or the optimization problem is hard and they need more time to think about it. So I do think it will help.
Mm.
Will it fix the problem forever? Probably not.
I think when part of the problem is sort of trust and, you know, being able to invest off the back of balancing mechanism revenues, the fixes need to be fairly straightforward and simple for people to kind of understand them in a way, or the fixes can't be too complicated, I suppose, for them to help address that issue. And also maybe you just, not trial and error. Maybe you just need to see performance. You need to see the rates improve. And these changes should hopefully work towards that. But maybe it's ultimately the kind of headline figures that people want to see changing.
Yeah. I guess if you've identified the problem as the system is complicated for engineers to use, takes a long time, and is unwieldy, then this is the solution.
Mm.
But if your view of what the problem is, of the problem is that actually the balancing mechanism itself is the problem, then it doesn't fix that.
Yeah.
Which you could say, well, because it's a mechanism that deals in unfungible products simplified down to one level, you'll never fix this until you split out the BM into more bespoke products. That's another point of view.
Yeah. So a mechanism that's used to trade fungible products is also called a market.
A market?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think so.
So yeah, I mean, the proper solution for, you know, being able to exchange fungible products is a market, right? So in my mind, that we should be working towards having that clear merit order, having clearly defined products so that the dispatch decisions are much more straightforward. You are just going from, you know, least to lowest cost to higher cost. Yeah, this rationalizing and standardizing the services and products that we're taking in the balancing mechanisms is a really important part of that, to create effectively a balancing market. And I think that's the kind of the real solution to skip rates as I see them. You know, it's not just about the systems improvements that need to happen, but it's also about fundamentally what is the procurement mechanism here? Is it a balancing mechanism where you've got a lot of different things happening all at once and different prices? Or is it a balancing market or series of markets where you've got a standard product, you know, a clear merit order and a clearing price as well? And I certainly prefer the market-based option, but I am an economist.
There could also be an interaction with our previous topic, locational pricing as well. So if you did have locational markets, there could be significant chunks of the balancing mechanism you no longer, well, not necessarily needed, but that had to do less work.
And if we, there's also the question around central dispatch as well, right? Which is kind of linked in to locational marginal pricing, and we've touched on it as well. I suppose when we did have a central dispatch market, we did have more of a balancing market, I suppose, then, didn't we? There was a single marginal price for each half hour. There were constraints taken on top of that, but the energy itself, there was a market for it in a way that we don't have now.
I think skip rates are avoiding the fundamental cost merit order in bid offer acceptances. And there's a couple of good reasons for why they do occur, mainly around technical constraints and workload. That is part of the legacy of how the BM has grown over time and how it's dealing with the new challenges that have arisen in the last 10 years. And there's some icy changes that are coming down the pipe that should help alleviate some of that. But perhaps skip rates are a more fundamental challenge due to the nature of the balancing mechanism rather than something that can just be fixed through better IT.
Nice. That was a lovely summary.
Yeah. That's what I'm here for.
Thank you so much for listening. If you want to follow us, you can find us on Twitter, LinkedIn, at the Substation Podcast. I'm on energy_burns at twitter.com. I'm sure if you put that in, it'll find me.
No.
I'm not using the new name.
No, me neither. And I'm at Notional Grid on Twitter. Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.